It is the A-Train Sports Talk Podcast with your host and conductor, Anthony Smith, the number one podcast throughout the state of Kansas, city to city, state to state, coast to coast. Interviews, news reports, breaking news, and the return of outside-the-box non-sports related. So tune in to your favorite host and conductor of the A-Train Sports Talk Podcast, Anthony Smith. Welcome to the A-Train Sports Talk Podcast, your host, your conductor. Number one podcast throughout the state of Kansas. And you know, obviously, I have no data to back that up, but I'm claiming it. What makes me so number one-ish? Well, it's because I do things a little bit different. And I tend to step outside of the mainstream. And tonight is one of those nights where I'm really going to step out of the mainstream. Now, yes, I do have a top 25 running backs of all time to conclude, which I will. But I have a special treat. You heard my last podcast. I had a very special guest on by the name of Matthew Fowler. Yes, I still give him applause every time I bring up his name. He is the coach of the Oswego Indians in Oswego, Kansas. Coach of an 8-man football team. And since then, I've decided I want to dive into the history of 8-man football. I find it very intriguing. And what some of you might not know, unless you're directly involved in 8-man football, it goes back a long ways. Some of y'all are probably just not really hearing about it. But 8-man football, in this particular article I'm looking at, is talking about the uniform. It says, nothing brings together a small town like a Friday night football game. Many Kansas high schools carry on this fall tradition by sending only 8 players onto the field instead of the traditional 11. And it's showing a picture of a uniform. It says the football equipment was used by Waverly High School football players from the mid-1990s until being replaced by newer gear. Waverly High School played 11-man football until 2002 when the school decided to switch to 8-man. The equipment that is pictured may have been used by both Waverly's 11-man and 8-man teams. So it talks about fielding a team. There are many reasons why schools decide to play with fewer men. In many rural communities, there simply aren't enough students to fill out the roster. 11-man teams sometimes have to travel too far to play other schools of comparable size. 8-man also requires less equipment, which means scarce resources can be allocated elsewhere. The decision to switch to 8-man was very difficult for Waverly High School. The community of Waverly has been slowly losing population since 1980. Many other Kansas towns are facing the same reality since the majority of the state's population now resides in urban areas. Some communities are so small that 2 neighboring schools must cooperate to form 1 football team. Even though Waverly High School has enough football players to field an 11-man team, by 2002, most nearby schools of similar size were playing 8-man. So the Waverly Bulldogs switched too. While some residents disliked the idea, this town of about 600 people has increasingly supported the team. The Bulldogs kicked the fall of 2006 with a preseason scrimmage attended by over 150 people. The team rewarded this faith by winning back-to-back state championships, 2005 and 2006. Eight-man is not the first set of football rules to require fewer players than the traditional 11. Six-man teams appeared in Kansas as early as 1935, and many smaller schools chose to play this version of football. The rules were different enough, though, that when 8-man was introduced with rules more similar to 11-man, 6-man schools added 2 players to the starting lineups. Today, about 100 schools across the state play 8-man. There aren't big differences between 8-man and 11-man football. Generally, the 3 positions absent in the 8-man offense are 2 tackles and a wide receiver. The defense plays with 2 fewer backs and 1 less lineman. 8-man teams also play on a smaller field measuring 80 by 40 yards as opposed to an 11-man field of 100 by 53 and a third yards. Other than that, the rules and equipment are basically the same. Windham High School was the first Kansas team to try 8-man in 1956. They convinced Kannapolis High School to assemble a team, and the two schools played an exhibition game following the regular season. Windham lost, but they started a tradition that has continued every fall since. So there's a little bit of history on 8-man football. Just to whet your appetite, because trust me, there is going to be more where that come from. As a matter of fact, what I really want to do, I want to look into which states have 8-man football. 8-man football is particularly prominent in the Midwestern United States, with Nebraska, Kansas, and Oklahoma being 3 of the 4 states with more than 80 8-man teams. So here's what I want to do. I'm going to keep this train rolling. Eight-man football is a form of gridiron football, generally played by high schools with similar enrollments. Eight-man football differs from the traditional 11-man game with the reduction of 3 players on each side of the ball and a field width that can be reduced to 40 yards. 13 and a third yards narrower than the 53 and a third yard 11-man field. Most states continue to play on a field 100 yards long, whereas a few states opt for 80 yards length. Reduced player football, which consists of 8-man, 6-man, and 9-man football, has gained popularity across the United States. As of 2015, 1,561 schools in 30 states sponsor reduced player football, with 1,161 of those teams participating in 8-man leagues, whereas 284 teams play 6-man football and 116 teams play 9-man football. Very interesting. 8-man football shares the same rules, procedures, and structure as the traditional 11-man game, with a few minor differences. Eight-man football is played with eight players on offense and defense, three fewer than the 11-man game. It depends greatly on the type of formation used, but the eliminated players are commonly two offensive tackles and a skill position player on offense, and one defensive back, one linebacker, and one defensive lineman on defense. The size of the playing field is often smaller in eight-man football than in 11-man. To accommodate six fewer players on the field, the width of the field is 40 yards wide, 37 meters, and 13 and a third yards narrower than the 53 and a third yard 11-man field. Most eight-man league mandate 100-yard length fields, where a few choose the 80-yard long field length option. There are several professional eight-man football leagues in the United States. Due to the eight-man format being adopted by most indoor football leagues, these leagues typically use a 50-yard field by roughly 25 yards field, as professional eight-man football is usually played indoors. There are some eight-man leagues that play outdoors. However, in Texas, the American Eight-Man Football League plays on a 100-yard field, and in Illinois and Missouri, the Eight-Man Football League, which is 8FL, plays on a 60-yard field. In recent years, organizations that previously played six-man football have been converting to eight-man football, leading to the expansion of the eight-man game. Eight-man football is particularly prominent in the Midwestern United States, with Nebraska, Kansas, and Oklahoma being three of the four states with more than 80 eight-man teams. A write-up on eight-man football in Kansas appeared in Sports Illustrated's Tribute to the State. So there you have some history on eight-man football, which I hope you have enjoyed thus far in this first segment. And like I said, I was prompted to do that because of my good friend Matt Fowler. He didn't even know I was going to do this. So when he hears this, I'm pretty sure he would be tickled pink. And I'm hoping that this opens the door for me to get to meet some more coaches that coach eight-man football. One of the things that Coach Fowler talked about was the, I don't know what you call it, but where the coaches get together and they talk about schemes and all that, you know. I want to get together with these coaches and have, even on my podcast, have what's called a media day. Have a radio row. I believe this could be the start of something, a cooperative effort, a collaboration of sorts. Like I say, I always say that my podcast is number one throughout the state of Kansas. Like I say, I don't have no data to back that up, but I think what will get me over, and it's not about me getting over, it's about me bringing exposure to other people, is because I'm not afraid to do something different. And if I can get with these coaches and have what's called a media day prior to their season start, I'll be thrilled and tickled and honored and humbled all at the same time. But I hope you enjoyed this little briefing on eight-man football. So what I am going to do right here, I am going to take a break. And when I come back, you remember that list of running backs I was telling you about? I haven't forgotten about that. I know it's been a couple of days, but I'm going to still give it to you. Right here on the A-Train Sports Talk Podcast, your host and conductor, Anthony Smith. Haircut? Do like me. Go to Midtown Barbershop, located at 256 North Topeka. We have two seasoned barbers on staff. Tony and Malcolm. Once again, that's Midtown Barbershop, located 256 North Topeka. Bald haircuts, fades, beard trims, grooming, you name it. You may go in looking like $5, but by the time they get through, you'll leave out looking like brand new money. Simply priceless. That's at Midtown Barbershop with Tony and Malcolm. Tell them A-Train sent you.
You are all aboard A-Train Sports Talk Podcast with your host and conductor, Anthony Smith.
Welcome back to the A-Train Sports Talk Podcast. Your host and your conductor, Anthony Smith. And I know I still have a list of 25 greatest running backs to get to. And I may not even get to it this episode, because this eight-man thing has me intrigued. And some of you may or may not know it, that there is a small but impressive fraternity group of players in the NFL that actually played eight-man football. And guess what? I'm going to do this segment. I'm going to give that to you, because you may know it and you may not know it. So in this situation, I guess you could say I will introduce to some and present to others those who have played eight-man that are in the NFL. Starting out with inside Spencer Brown's journey from eight-man football to the Buffalo Bills. Lenox, Iowa isn't quite the midway point between Des Moines, Iowa and Omaha, Nebraska. It's simultaneously on the way and out of the way, venturing off Interstate 80 to stop in the small town of 1,400 people as about an hour and a half and change onto what is normally a two-hour drive. But Northern Iowa coach Mark Farrelly was making good time on his recruiting trip from Des Moines to Omaha and figured he could spare the hour to check out the 6'6" kid he had heard about in Lenox. 6 years after meeting Coach Farrelly, that kid from Lenox, offensive tackle Spencer Brown, was selected in the third round of the 2021 NFL draft by the Buffalo Bills. Farrelly took a chance on an eight-man football standout with the right measurables and attitude, and all it cost him was a few gallons of gas, a couple of hours, and a scholarship. For Farrelly, it was worth every minute. It's probably one of the best scholarship experiences I've had as a head coach, he said. I'm sitting there talking to him, and there was a connection, so I offered him. I told him, you've got a scholarship to Northern Iowa. And his first comment was, you mean a real scholarship? I get chills thinking about it, because he was a big man sitting there with tears flowing, asking if it was a real scholarship. I told him, well, that's the only kind I've got. It was a great experience, and as it turned out, it couldn't have been for a greater person. Chicago Bears running back Tariq Cohen, Dallas Cowboys linebacker Leighton Vander Esch, and now Brown form a small but impressive fraternity of current NFL players who played eight-man football in high school. The condensed version of 11-man football is generally a product of smaller towns and not known for producing players who go to Division I college programs or the NFL. But in a town barely large enough to fill one section at Buffalo's Highmark Stadium, Brown managed to do exactly that thanks to his size, a film session on a classmate's computer, and a coach who had a little time to spare. It was seriously a shot in the dark, Brown said. I was the biggest shot in the dark possible because they didn't know what I was. Just knew I was a tall kid and athletic. That's all he knew. And then this happened. So the risk paid off, I guess. I mean, he could catch anything. When Lenox High switched to 8-man football in 2004, Alan Dukes couldn't have been more on board. The Lenox native had coached 8-man in Missouri and was excited to do the same in his hometown. But the transition was met with some resistance from the community. People tend to reject what they don't understand, and this was a new concept. There are still a lot of people who don't consider 8-man football real football because it's not 11-man, Duke said. Well, I'm here to tell you, it's exactly the same game. You still have to run, block, and tackle. It's little bitty changes, but people are so biased against it. It's been a godsend for a lot of small schools to be able to keep their programs alive. 8-man football was lower than second class. The state really didn't care about us. But now they have to because there's 70-something schools in Iowa that play 8-man. The field is smaller than a standard 11-man, which is 100 yards by 53.3 yards. The Lenox field is 80 yards by 40 yards. Though dimensions for 8-man fields vary depending on the governing body. Penalties are the same as 11-man football, but final scores often look more like basketball results than football. There is no tackles. The offensive line goes center, guard, tight end, Brown said. Then you have no wide receivers, and it's just quarterback, fullback, halfback. That's it. The field is smaller. The score is going to be like 80-65, and no one blinks. That's normal. Lenox went 8-1 in its first year of 8-man football in 2004, and even though it missed the playoffs, the town was hooked. So was Brown, even before he joined the varsity. Dukes was well aware of him. Everyone knows everyone in Lenox, Dukes said. The coach figured even though the 6'2", 190-pound Brown played fullback for his middle school team, he would be making the transition to guard when he reached high school. That didn't last long. We played him at guard his freshman and part of his sophomore year. Then he came up to us and asked to move out one slot. So we moved him to tight end, and he never relinquished it, Duke said. I mean, he could catch anything. He had such a long wingspan that anything that was close to him, he could pull it in. Spencer had such an advantage on everybody since he was taller than all the defensive backs he played against. Lenox threw the ball only when we had to, Duke said. So Brown never put up big receiving numbers in high school. In fact, he was arguably a better defensive end than tight end, leading the state in sacks as a senior. Brown injured his knee playing basketball his junior season and was cleared to play football on the day of the 2015 season opener. He recorded 7 sacks in a blowout victory against East Union. It would have been 10, as Brown is quick to remember, were it not for the 3 that were called back due to penalties. Then there was a game against Lenox undefeated rival Fremont Miller when Brown caught the go-ahead touchdown and sealed the victory with a strip sack. The TD was one of those where he just reached up with one hand and pulled it in, Duke said. We basically won district on that catch right there. He was all over the field when he played defensive end the way he knew he could. Other teams couldn't run at him. They'd run away from him because he was that talented. Lenox assistant coach Todd Parrish said they started seeing something during Brown's senior season when it became apparent his size and talent set him apart. At the urging of Brown's cousin, who happened to be close friends of Parrish, don't forget, it's a small town, the assistant coach created a highlight film for Lennox's star tight end. In my brain, we're talking Division II because nobody out here goes Division I, Parrish remembered laughing. When looking at Division I schools, I'm like, those boys are big, they're quick, and I just don't know if we're quite there. Next section of this, you gotta get up, man. Farrelly has been the head coach at Northern Iowa since 2001. He is the sixth longest tenured coach in Division I, FCS, and eighth longest in Division I. He'd never been to Lennox until that 2015 trip on a whim en route to Omaha. There was this big 6'5", 6'6", kid in Lennox. That's all I knew, Farrelly said. It was not planned. It was more of a timing thing where I had an opening and I was strictly going off a height on a sheet of paper. He called ahead before his arrival at Lennox High, where Brown waited for him at the front door, like walking into somebody's house, Farrelly described it. After a few minutes of pleasantries, Farrelly asked to see his highlight film. So Brown led him to the school's computer lab, filled with massive and outdated white monitors, with an active class of students. Brown approached one of the students with a short, authoritative message. "You got to get up, man," Brown said. For the next 10 minutes or so, Brown and Farrelly watched the highlight tape Parrish had put together. "It was difficult to watch on those monitors," Farrelly said, but he saw what he needed to see, a kid who can run. That gave the student his workstation back. They gave the student his workstation back and spoke privately in the teacher's lounge where Brown's personality and presence checked every box for Farrelly, who offered him a scholarship on the spot, roughly 30 minutes after arriving on campus. "I cried right in front of him. I was emotional for sure," Brown said. "I didn't know what I was going to do for college. I didn't know if I was going to go to any school and play sports, but he sealed the deal for me right there. I didn't know anything about UNI, really. I hadn't been to the campus, didn't meet any of the teachers for my major. I didn't know any of that. I just committed the next week." University of Iowa lightly recruited Brown as a tight end before signing Detroit Lions 2019 first-round pick T.J. Hawkinson, and Iowa State offered him a spot as a preferred walk-on. But Northern Iowa was Brown's first offer, and that meant something to him. Farrelly originally brought him in as a tight end, but kept the door open for a move to the offensive line, depending on how well he moved once he put on additional weight. Brown spent his redshirt freshman season as a tight end, but switched to tackle after eclipsing 300 pounds while still retaining his mobility. Similar to the switch he made as a high school freshman, Brown embraced his new role. Looking back, it's hard for him to argue with the results. "I loved it. I don't know what it was, but as soon as I got in the room and started learning, it just kind of took off for me," Brown said. "I just threw all my chips into one basket once I got into the offensive line room, and now I'm sitting here in Buffalo." It's fun that this is my job. Looking back, Parrish, who maintains close relationship with Brown and didn't miss many of his games at Northern Iowa, said his former pupil grew so fast in high school it took him a while to get used to his new body. Brown got used to it quickly in college, where he packed on nearly 100 pounds thanks to a diet of beef and corn, Farrelly said. When Northern Iowa canceled his 2020 football season because of the coronavirus pandemic, multiple schools in the Big Ten and Big 12 courted the now 6'8", 315-pound Brown. But he remained loyal to the school that believed in him when he was 6'5", a 6'5", 200-pound kid who couldn't believe he'd been offered a real scholarship. With the Bills, he'll have time to adjust to the level of competition behind incumbent starter Darrell Williams. But for the first time in his playing career, his team knows exactly what position it wants Brown to play. For me, right now, he'd just be a swing tackle and not necessarily a guard, Bills general manager Brandon Bean said. It gets hard to move in there at guard when you're as tall as he is. He's smart enough to do it. It's not that we wouldn't rep him in there. We do like to have our guys do it just in case on game day something happens, if you only have so many linemen up. His main spots will be left and right tackle. Brown has spent the past few months in and out of Lenox, where his mother is the high school principal, and more Buffalo Bills flags are flying than anywhere else in Iowa. He works out at his old high school and hangs out at the baseball field. All a reminder of the journey he has been on over the past 9 years. Eight-man football in a small town. It is different ends of the world from the NFL, Brown said. You just have to show up in Buffalo and do your job. The rest of the stuff is easy. It's fun that this is my job. What a story of a young man from eight-man to NFL. The story of one, if we can get that name back up here, of Spencer Brown. Inside Spencer Brown's journey from eight-man football to the Buffalo Bills. And on that note, I am going to go ahead and take a break. When I come back, I will have some more for you. So don't you dare go nowhere. This train is still building up ahead of steam. It's the A-Train Sports Talk Podcast, your host and conductor, Anthony Smith. Heard of Drink to Shrink? It has 9 powerful herbs: persimmon leaves, holy thistle, malva leaves, marshmallow leaves, blessed thistle, papaya, ginger, chamomile, and myrrh. It cleanses the upper and lower intestines, kidney, colons, lungs, and even the largest organ on our body. It cleanses our skin. Did you know the average person loses 5 pounds in 5 days? Our bodies can hold up to 25 pounds of waste. Most diseases known to man starts in the gut. How does it taste? That all depends on your preference. For more information, contact Anthony Smith at 316-553-2010. Or you can go to his website at www.beepic.com/SaxmanHelp. That's www.beepic.com/SaxmanHelp.
You're all aboard the A-Train Sports Talk Podcast with your host and conductor, Anthony Smith.
Welcome back to the A-Train Sports Talk Podcast. Your host and your conductor, Anthony Smith. And as I promised, I'm going to get back into this
25 greatest running backs list. And what I'm actually going to do from my previous show, I'm just going to start all over from scratch. I may not give it all to you in this show, but I promise you, I will pick up from where I left off and give you the complete list. Now, I want to also give you my disclaimer. This list is compiled from Athlon Sports. And you have to be aware that everybody has their top 25 and everybody is not in agreement. But I'm going to roll with this one, as this is where I get a lot of information from as well, too. And in looking at this list of the 25 greatest running backs in NFL history, keep this in mind. Barry Sanders needed only 10 seasons to rush for more than 15,000 yards and leave an incredible mark on the NFL. The running back position has played a vital role as a staple in the NFL since its inception, even in the modern era of football where quarterbacks and high-octane passing games are all the rage. A great rushing attack can make all the difference between winning and losing. Big pass plays are fun to watch, but there is still nothing more exciting than watching a truly great running back carve up a defense. Over the years, there have been numerous outstanding running backs. Many of them are deserving to make this list, but there is only room for the 25 best, factoring in various criteria such as statistics, personal best, team accomplishments, supporting cast, the era in which they played, and overall impact on the game. Here are the 25 greatest running backs in NFL history. But there is also a list of 10 running backs that barely missed the cut. And this one will always be a head scratcher to me because not only is he not in the Hall of Fame, but he's not on this list. Otis Anderson, Larry Zonka, Corey Dillon, Priest Holmes, Bo Jackson, Steven Jackson, Fred Taylor, Herschel Walker, Ricky Waters, Ricky Williams. So coming in at number 25 on this list, Marshawn Lynch. He played for Buffalo from 2007 to 2010, and Seattle 2010-2015, and 2019, Oakland, and 2017-18, Oakland. 149 games, 10,413 rushing yards, 4.2 yards per carry, 85 rushing TDs, 12,627 yards from scrimmage, 94 total TDs. Beast Mode's freakish combination of power and finesse was unlike any running back that came before him. Five-time Pro Bowler, Super Bowl champion, Lynch's highlight reels are that of legend. Number 24, Tiki Barber. New York Giants, 1997 to 2006, 154 games, 10,449 rushing yards, 4.7 yards per carry, 55 rushing TDs, 17,359 all-purpose yards, 68 TD, total TDs. Barber retired at the height of his career, rushing for at least 1,200 yards in each of his last six seasons with the Giants. His versatility as an outstanding pass catcher and blocker makes him one of the greatest all-purpose backs of all time. He ranks 15th in NFL history in yards from scrimmage. Sean Alexander, Seattle, 2000-2007, and Washington, 2008. 123 games, 9,453 rushing yards, 4.3 yards per carry, 100 rushing TDs, 10,973 yards from scrimmage, 112 total TDs. Alexander
is just one of nine running backs in the history of the NFL with at least 100 rushing yards, rushing touchdowns. The 2005 NFL MVP scored 112 total TDs in just 96 starts. Alexander's 27 rushing TDs in 2005 tied for the second most in a single season. Number 22, Jim Taylor. Green Bay, 1958 to 1966, New Orleans, 1967. 129 games, 8,597 rushing yards, 4.4 yards per carry, 83 rushing TDs, 10,539 all-time purpose yards, 93 total TDs. Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 1976. This bruising Hall of Fame fullback helped the Packers win four NFL championships and a victory in Super Bowl I. He took home NFL MVP honors in 1962 and is widely considered the greatest running back in Packer history. Number 21, Terrell Davis. Denver Broncos, 1995 to 2001, 78 games, 7,607 rushing yards, 4.6 yards per carry, 8,887 yards from scrimmage, 65 total TDs, Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2017. Now is where I am going to have questions, because when you look at stats of Otis Anderson, and I spoke about him on an earlier podcast I did a couple of episodes back. I gave you his credentials. He's a Super Bowl MVP, a two-time Super Bowl winner, and the only Hall of Fame he is in the St. Louis Sports Hall of Fame, because at that time he played for the St. Louis Football Cardinals. He won his Super Bowl with the New York Giants. He has numbers and statistics. Yes, he suffered some injuries, but there's another guy named Earl Campbell whose career was kind of cut short because of the style of running back he was. He ended up dealing with injuries. He's in the Hall of Fame. Terrell Davis, Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2017. And we can't get Otis Anderson in the Hall of Fame. I'm going to keep sounding this whistle until somebody hears my voice and we do what's right and get Otis Anderson in the Hall of Fame. Anyway, Davis would likely be much higher up this list if not for concluding his career early due to injury. All right, see, there's my point, injury. He accomplished so much in a very short period of time. He is one of just eight players to rush for at least 2,000 yards in the season. Davis also won two Super Bowls with the Broncos, a Super Bowl MVP award, and was the league MVP in 1998. Number 20, and I'm going to conclude this podcast with number 20, which means I will come back probably later this week, maybe Saturday, or maybe before that, to give you some more of this list. Number 20, Edgerrin James. Indianapolis, 1999 to 2005, Arizona 2006 to 2008, Seattle 2009. 148 games, 12,246 rushing yards, 4 yards per carry, 80 rushing TDs, 15,610 yards from scrimmage, 91 total TDs, Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2020. James is the Colts' all-time leading rusher. He is also a two-time NFL rushing champion and ranks 13th in NFL history in yards gained on the ground. His dynamic running style and pass-catching abilities made him one of the most dangerous backs in league history. James was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame as a member of the class of 2020. And that is where I am going to conclude right there. This session of the A-Train Sports Talk podcast, which I hope you have thoroughly enjoyed. Excuse my rant, but I hope my rant was timely, and I hope someone hears it, and I hope it lands into the ears of the right people and will consider some of the words that I have said, because I think there are some people, if you look at stats and if that's what they're looking at and truly looking at, and if you're also looking at Super Bowl rings, which that accounts for something,
then dadgummit, I'm going to say it like this. Otis Anderson not only needs to be on this list, but he also needs to be in the Sports Hall of Fame. Anyway, that's going to conclude the A-Train Sports Talk podcast as I'm getting ready to bring this train into the station. Once again, hope you have enjoyed as much as I've enjoyed being your conductor. Until the next time, take care of yourself and each other.